This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Next, we'll tackle another hurdle to create a better healthcare system. We'll speak with Dr. Jerome Kassirer, who wrote On the Take, How Medicine's Complicity with Big Business Can Endanger Your Health. If someone offered you a bribe, what would you do? Would you reject it outright, or would you accept it? Would it depend upon your financial situation, your future employment, family expectations? Would it depend on whether it would harm anyone else? Do you think that you could foresee all those affected and how the situation would play out? These always seem like easy questions to answer correctly until you're faced with the actual situation. There's another problem. What if the bribe was considered an acceptable standard, one that was expected by your managers? In his book, On the Take, How Medicine's Complicity with Big Business Can Endanger Your Health, Jerome Kassirer addresses the serious problems that rise from continuous conflicts of interest. Eleanor Ostrinsky asks Dr. Kassirer about standard practices.
The pharmaceutical industry employs 88,000 drug salesmen. And what they do is they visit doctors in their offices or they prowl the corridors of hospitals, bringing lunches for the nurses, bringing lunches for the house staff, bringing lunches for the doctors, and then pass out their pharmaceutical literature. And there may be nothing wrong with that, except that some of the information they give may not be completely unbiased. And, of course, they're always going to recommend the newest, most expensive drugs, and generally drugs that have not been tested over a long period of time.
One would say, in defense of those drug representatives, is that doctors need to know what are the latest drugs. There is no clear, easy way to do that, and so these folks need to let them know.
Sure, that's the argument that the industry would make. The fact is that there are plenty of sources of information other than pharmaceutical companies who want you to use their most expensive and the newest drugs. And there are plenty of good sources for that, such as medical journals, such as the so-called medical letter or websites that the government puts out or that other medical centers put out.
If doctors are constantly being visited by these representatives and being offered all sorts of things, are they expected to do a favor for the drug company?
You know, it's only natural to want to reciprocate for something nice that somebody's done for you. And the meals and the gifts and the textbooks and the trips and the honoraria for speaking engagements are nothing more than an inducement for the doctors to reciprocate by using the drugs that the company puts out.
And how do they reciprocate?
Well, for one thing, some doctors give lectures for drug companies. They're paid for it, and sometimes those lectures are biased toward the company's drugs. Sometimes doctors are engaged in developing policies about clinical problems called clinical practice guidelines, and sometimes those guidelines can be biased toward greater use of drugs than is appropriate. Just as an example, the cholesterol guidelines that came from the National Institutes of Health and from the American Heart Association a few weeks ago, it turned out that the people who put those guidelines together, there were nine of them, and seven of the nine had arrangements with three to five of the companies that made the statin drugs. I'd much prefer to get my information from people who had no such arrangements.
Of course. So how did you find out, or how did people find out, or even how would they find out, who has what relationship with what pharmaceutical company?
These arrangements are very well hidden. They are not generally publicly acknowledged, and the way you can find them is to look at medical articles that some of the authors have written. They're also listed in continuing medical education lectures. They're required to list their financial conflicts of interest. But having said that, in terms of trying to find out, for example, whether the FDA committees that recommended the use of Vioxx, whether any of the members of those committees had a financial conflict, the FDA does not give out that kind of information at all. So you have no idea whether those committees or some of the committees might have been biased in favor of the drug.
The bias, how does it manifest itself?
There are a number of examples where conflict of interest figured in an important way in various drugs. I think if you take the drug Resulin, for example, it was a new drug for diabetes that was introduced in the late 90s, and it turned out that there was some very serious toxicity with the drug, very severe liver damage. And multiple committees of the FDA looked at the data on the toxicity and it continued to stay on the market when it had been already removed from the market in Britain. And it eventually came to one advisory committee where 9 of the 10 members of the committee had ties to the company that made the drug. And they recommended that stay on the market. And it did stay on the market for a while. And during that time, there were more deaths from the drug. So it can be a dangerous situation when major policy is being made by people who have financial conflicts.
Do you think that pharmaceutical companies are actually targeting those people who are going to be on various committees at the FDA in order to ensure that their drug passes?
The Washington Legal Foundation, which is a group that does a lot of legal work for the pharmaceutical industry, made the point, and I'll give you a quote. It said, "It's widely acknowledged that most of the top medical authorities in this country and virtually all of the top speakers on medical topics are employed in some capacity by one or more of the country's pharmaceutical companies. That is how it should be," they say. That was a direct quote. So the answer to your question is, yes, I believe they pack committees, and they pack the kind of continuing medical education ventures that doctors get all the time. They also develop what I've called front organizations. For example, the National Anemia Action Council, the Council on Hormone Education. These are very official-sounding organizations, but they're not. They're basically pharmaceutically supported, a bunch of physicians who are promoting the use of drugs when it may or may not be appropriate.
And why would doctors who chose their profession in order to help people go ahead and represent the pharmaceutical company and may endanger the lives of those that they treat?
I'd have to say that most doctors are not doing this sort of thing. Most doctors are acting ethically and responsibly, but there's a small number that are engaged with industry, and I'm quite convinced that they probably believe that they're doing the right thing. But the fact is that bias tends to be a kind of a subconscious thing. Most people, if you ask them, are they biased, they would say no. However, they would probably quickly tell you that others could be biased.
So what do we do?
We need to alert the public to try to get some of these arrangements with industry toned down. I believe the doctor should not be taking any free samples. I don't think they should be taking any free gifts. I don't think they should be having any free meals or free education. I think doctors should be paying for those things themselves. I've asked for the Institute of Medicine in Washington to take as close a look at this as they have of medical errors. And I think that editors of medical journals should be free of conflict. They shouldn't have stock in drug companies. They shouldn't be consultants for drug companies. They should be clean.
Well, those same kinds of laws are enacted for politicians in this country. And we know very well that lobbyists take politicians to golfing ranges and on trips, and all these private interest groups have the same kind of power and pressure on politicians. The pharmaceutical industry does it for physicians.
Right. And is it always in our best interest?
Well, it's rarely in the best public interest. I suppose I'm asking you, is there a way of legislating it so that it would actually be observed?
Well, there are already some proscriptions against certain things that doctors have done in the past. For example, there was a time when drug representatives were allowed in doctors' offices in with patients, and the Office of Inspector General of the Health and Human Services has said that that's a no-no. So are there legal ways of dealing with this? Yes. The problem is that these are very complex arrangements, and trying to legislate all of them would be a kind of a nightmare, I think.
And I suppose now we have to say that we have to change the entire system so that this doesn't happen.
Well, I can assure you that there's plenty of blame to go around. There's no question about the fact that the pharmaceutical industry has not lived up to what I believe is a proper public accounting. They certainly are not always in the, doing things in the public good. I mean, for example, they dropped out of the vaccine business because they weren't making enough money, and now look at the soup we're in with that. They have stopped doing research in antibiotics. They have never, well, I shouldn't say never, they have in recent years paid little attention to important diseases running around the world, like tuberculosis, like malaria. So there are lots of things that the pharmaceutical industry could do but hasn't done. And yes, it's true that the doctors are misbehaving, but believe me, there's plenty of blame to go around.
Most people would say that physicians earn a handsome amount in relation to other jobs. Why would they be looking for the extra free meal, the extra trip?
I think, in general, people want to make more than they're making. I think it's also true that there's enormous pressure on doctors. Their lives are kind of a pale example of what they used to be. They sometimes are involved with multiple insurance companies. They have to find out what's in the formulary for each of these companies. They have to worry about the reimbursement from each of the companies. They have all kinds of restrictions, and the amount of time they can spend in order to make a living with each patient is relatively small. So they're not a happy bunch.
And so where should we go now? What should we try and lobby for?
Well, every single medical school should have a course in the ethics of financial conflicts. And I think we need a dialogue at the national level. Congressional committees ought to be starting to look at financial conflicts of interest.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Does the healthcare system, as it is today, work for you? What could be changed? Log on to the Voices of Our World webpage, www.maryknoll.org/voices. There's a spot there for your feedback. Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. Donald Barlett and Jerome Kassirer are just two of the voices of our world. Voices of Our World is a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. Our producers are Eleanor Ostrinsky and Kathy Golden, and our executive producer is Larry Rich. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. You'll find more information on today's guests and topics on our program's website, www.maryknoll.org/voices. And if you'd like to find out more about Mary Knoll or to subscribe to Mary Knoll Magazine in English or Spanish, just call 1-877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARY-KNOLL. If you have questions or comments about this show, again, just call 1-877-MARY-KNOLL. If you missed a portion of this program, you can catch us on Mary Knoll's website, www.maryknoll.org/voices. And please, join us next time for more Voices of Our World.